Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 13th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we'll tell you about a project that uses satellite imagery to help document human rights abuses in violent regions around the globe. We'll also investigate the relationship between the shape of a man's face and how aggressive he is. We'll tell you what anatomical features give sprinters an advantage on the track. But first, Suzanne Bard spoke to a researcher in Germany who says that babies already have accents by the time they're just a few days old.
A baby's cry is universally recognizable, but now there's evidence that a newborn's cries may be shaped by the language it hears while still in the womb. Angela Frederici is a neuroscientist at the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Germany. She says that German speakers stress the first syllable of every word, while French speakers stress the second syllable.
Like in German, you say mama, papa. And in French, you say maman, papa.
She and her colleagues recorded the cries of German babies and were surprised to discover that they also stress the first part of their cry.
The cry is up in the beginning and then slowly goes down in the pitch contour. And for the French babies, which had heard those words where you stress the second syllable, the cries start very slowly and then go up in pitch and intensity and then sort of, you know, are highest at the end, as if they would stress it on the second part of the cry.
So if babies are learning the contours of their mother tongue in the womb, I asked Professor Frederici what it would sound like in there.
This is very similar to what you hear when you put your head in the bathtub underwater and somebody is talking outside and you can hear that somebody is talking, but you cannot really hear what he or she is saying.
But she says even if you couldn't make out the words, you could still hear the pitch and rhythm of the speech.
I think it is amazing that the auditory system is in so early, and maybe this is one of the reasons of why human beings are so good with speech.
The researchers think the pattern would hold true in babies raised with very different languages.
Thanks, Suzanne. Switching gears now, some track coaches say sprinters are born, not made. Turns out scientists may have found some truth in that. Penn State University kinesiologists Steve Piazza and Sabrina Lee compared the feet and ankles of top college sprinters to those of non-sprinters. Piazza says a key section of the Achilles tendon was shorter in the sprinters.
When your Achilles tendon attaches closer to your ankle joint, while it does compromise your leverage, it also permits your muscle to shorten more slowly. And when that happens, the muscle is able to generate more force.
The sprinters also had long toes, which means that their feet stay in contact with the ground longer than average. And pushing harder and longer against the ground helps a sprinter accelerate at the start of a race. Piazza says this anatomy is even more pronounced in the cheetah, which is the best sprinter on Earth. Next, Justin Warner has another story about anatomy.
Actors who play tough guy roles tend to have a certain look. You may not be able to describe it, but you know it when you see it. Now, new scientific research suggests we do, in fact, judge a man's aggressiveness by the shape of his face, and we may often be right. The research comes from Brock University in Ontario, Canada. It started when psychologist Cheryl McCormick and her colleagues heard of a recently discovered sex difference called the facial width-to-height ratio. That's the distance between the left and right cheeks divided by the distance from the upper lip to the mid-brow. In general, adult men's faces have a greater width-to-height ratio than women's.
Normally, when a sex difference is found, it's related to the size of the body, so that because men tend to be bigger than women, some of these sex differences appear in the face. This sex difference wasn't related to size of the body, so we started thinking it might mean something.
Aggression came to mind, since men are also more aggressive than women, regardless of body size. So McCormick compared men's facial width-to-height ratio with their score on a well-established computerized test of aggression.
And we found that there was a relationship between this facial measure and how aggressive they were on this task.
Still, they wondered if this would hold up outside the lab. Her graduate student Justin Carre happened to be a hockey player, so he analyzed photos of hockey pros, and he found that players with wider faces spent more time in the penalty box. In their most recent study, they showed photos of men from their previous studies to strangers and asked the observers to rate how aggressive those men looked. The observers rated the high width-to-height ratio faces as more aggressive-looking, even if they saw each photo for less than a tenth of a second.
So even though people wouldn't be aware of this measurement, they wouldn't have any knowledge of this measurement, they seem to be using this particular facial structure on a subconscious level or non-conscious level to make their judgments.
And since the wider-faced men had in fact tested more aggressive, those judgments were more or less on base. McCormick says it's not yet clear why face structure and aggression correlate. It could be because they're the result of a common cause, like high testosterone levels. But she also notes that the way we scrunch our faces when we're angry actually creates a similar width-to-height effect. So it's possible that some people just look more angry by default, and they become aggressive in response to other people's presumptions.
Thanks, Justin. Finally today, Suzanne spoke with a researcher from AAAS's own Science and Human Rights program about how science is helping uncover human rights abuses.
When violence breaks out in a region and civilians are killed, it's often dangerous for human rights teams to assess the destruction firsthand. That's where satellite imagery can help.
The satellite imagery basically makes it so that people don't have to try and get out there physically and generally on foot, and then they might become a casualty in a particular conflict.
AAAS geographer Lars Bromley and his team partner with human rights organizations such as Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch to document atrocities in high-conflict regions from Burma to Zimbabwe.
We work with them in a collaborative process to figure out where things like satellite imagery and GPS units and mapping might be able to help them out.
This year, villages in the remote Busurungi area of the Democratic Republic of Congo were attacked by armed rebels. Bromley and his team compared satellite images from before and after the attack. They identified nearly 1,500 destroyed structures in a 100 square kilometer area.
We're able to quantify things like what might have caused the destruction. In this case, everything was pretty much burned down, which you can identify in the imagery.
Bromley says with access to more satellites, the program may be able to expand its reach to additional regions of conflict in coming years.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll tell you just how unique your own body's bacteria are. We'll investigate a marine worm that could help fix broken bones. And we'll answer a question we know has plagued many of you. If you swallow chewing gum, does it really take years to go through your system? Until then, keep current in the world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.